representing the City and County of San Francisco. I am the Vice Chair of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission's Programming and Allocations Committee. We will call this meeting to order. The Chair of the Committee, Commissioner Fidel Glover, is excused. If we can begin by confirming that we have a quorum.
Good morning. Yes, we have a quorum.
Great. Thank you very much. If we can now go to item number two, which is the consent calendar, which has items A, B, C, and D. I haven't seen a request to pull any item from the consent calendar. Colleagues, can we have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
We have a motion and a second. Motion by Commissioner Cortese, seconded by Commissioner Dodd. Can we take that without objection? Without objection. If we can now go to item number three, item three, 3A, Regional Measure 2 Capital Program Update.
Good morning, Commissioners. Shruti Hari from the Programming and Allocation Section. And I have for your information today a progress report on the status of the Regional Measure 2 capital projects. And this report covers a period of 6 months from January through June of this year for what we have identified as the 13 select RM2 projects, which are RM2 projects in advanced stages of development and construction, whereas it covers a period of 1 year from July of last year through June of this year for the rest of the RM2 projects. Starting with a brief overview on the RM2 capital program, it's been 8 years since we first started allocating RM2 dollars. And since then, as of June of 2012, we have allocated more than $1.2 billion, or in other words, approximately 80% of the RM2 dollars have already been allocated. Now, this slide here gives you a comparison of the programmed versus the allocated versus the reimbursed RM2 dollar amounts. As you're aware, the programmed or the legislated RM2 amount is $1.5 billion, out of which, as we saw on the previous slide, $1.2 billion has already been allocated. Out of this allocated amount, $0.9 billion has been reimbursed to the program project so far. Now, an analysis of these numbers indicated that most of the $0.3 billion that has not yet been allocated is due to the following projects in the upper box. And these projects are facing implementation challenges due to a lack of consensus on scope, complications in obtaining environmental approval, or just a lack of capital funds. Something I'd like to note here is that in the upcoming semi-annual reporting period, MTC would be focusing its efforts on addressing these projects with significant unallocated balances. And the next program update will include further discussion about this project delivery issue. One approach that we might take would be to consider an imposing an allocation deadline date of, for example, March 2014, after which the RM2 dollars on these unallocated projects would be subject to redirection to other corridor projects. The scenario is a little different for the non-reimbursed amounts, however. Most of the $0.3 billion that has not yet been reimbursed is due to the following projects in the lower box that are under construction right now, and these projects needed the funds to be allocated in order to award these contracts, and we expect that the reimbursements would catch up soon as the construction on these projects progresses along. The slide here, the map on the right gives you a geographic distribution of the RM2 projects in the various phases from environmental through construction. Whereas the pie chart gives you a percentage description of the RM2 projects in their various phases. And as you can see from the pie chart, close to two-thirds of the RM2 projects have either been completed or are in construction right now. And this slide is a snapshot of the status of this of all the 37 RM2 projects in terms of how well they are progressing. And what we do is we assess each RM2 project in terms from actually a schedule and a budget perspective and group them into one of the five categories shown on this slide. And so green denotes projects on track, moving along successfully without any issues. And yellow denotes projects on which are at risk and have either a schedule or a budget risk associated. Red denotes high risk, of course, and includes projects that have several challenges associated with them. I'd like to note here that the on-track projects has increased, the number has increased since the last update. Now, before going into the details of the individual program projects, I'd like to give you an overall summarized assessment of the RM2 program in this reporting period. As we saw on the previous slide, a majority of the projects are on track and under construction, with several sub-projects having been completed, and some of them completed actually at lower than budget owing to the favorable bid climate that's been continuing. And this has actually provided opportunities for additional relevant improvements on these projects. Some other RM2 projects, however, are still experiencing implementation challenges due to the reasons that we talked about on the previous slide. And MTC is continuing to work with the sponsors to provide direction and move these projects along as much as possible. Now, there was some uncertainty in the last reporting period regarding the impacts to the RM2 projects from elimination of redevelopment funding, but I'm happy to report that no major impacts to the RM2 projects have been identified at this time. And something else that we ought to note looking forward is that even though the level of heavy civil engineering construction remains depressed, there is an anticipation that commercial construction will increase significantly over the next few years. And this may also be especially due to the construction of the California high-speed rail program starting in 2013. And this may, of course, strain contracting resources and lead to cost escalation. Moving on, I wanted to give you an update on the completed RM2 project elements since the last report. And so a 1,200-stall parking garage, which is part of the Phase A of the Vallejo Station project, was completed in this reporting period and is going to be open to the public soon. In fact, the ribbon-cutting ceremony for this project is scheduled for tomorrow. The Alameda Oakland to South San Francisco ferry service was also launched in June of this year, while a ramp metering project for the I-80-680 SR-12 interchange project was completed in this reporting period. Now, we have several RM2 projects that are on track and under construction in this reporting period, and this here is a list of the transit projects that are under construction. We've also included an estimated completion date along with these projects if they continue to move forward at this great pace. So starting with the SMART project, which is under construction and progressing on schedule, I think it's the mainline track reconstruction work that is ongoing on this project at this time. Also, the vehicles are being fabricated in Illinois. The Oakland Airport Connector project is 50% complete and is very much on schedule for opening in summer 2014. The BART extension to Warm Springs project is on schedule as well. The subway segment is almost 90% complete, whereas the line track station systems contract is progressing in the design phase. Then we have the Transbay Terminal project. The last two utility relocation contracts on this project projects are being completed right now or in progress, and the basement train box excavation is also in progress on this project. Next are a couple of two projects that have been added in this reporting period, the Benicia Intermodal Facilities, which consists of two intermodal facilities in the city of Benicia that facilitate access to the regional Route 78 along 780 between the Pleasant Hill BART station and the Vallejo Ferry Terminal. And then we also have the NCTPA Multimodal Transit Center and Park and Ride Lot that is under construction. Next, we have the highway projects that are under construction. This is the list of the highway projects. On the Caldecott Tunnel Fourth Bow project, the main tunnel excavation, which was considered one of the highest risk elements of the project, has been completed. And the project itself is 65% complete on an overall basis. We have one project that's starting construction soon. The design for the I-580 westbound HOV lane improvements is complete, and this project will be moving into construction soon. Now, the next few slides that are included in your packet give you a lot more additional detail on construction and other activities on some of these RM2 projects that are on track and under construction. And this here is a list of some MTC projects, the Clipper, real-time transit, and the Safe Routes to Transit projects that are either nearing completion or already have been completed. Moving on to the at-risk project list, there's been some progress on some of these projects since the last reporting period. The AC Transit BRT project has secured environmental and local agency approvals and will be proceeding into the design phase. However, the project construction funding still has some timing issues, and there is a need to identify additional near-term funding or reduce the project cost in order to have a full funding plan. A lot might depend at this point on the results of the Measure B1 in November, which might identify, which if it passes, might have some possibilities for additional near-term funding for this project. For the US 101 Green Bay project, TAM has made significant progress in advancing the PAED for this project, but again, the current funding still does not cover the cost for the entire project. We had anticipated some potential Caltrans and FHWA issues with the proposed interchange spacing, but more recently we have received news that Caltrans has approved the design exceptions for the interchange spacing. And there's been some schedule delays ongoing with the Solana County I-80-680 interchange project due to the delay in obtaining environmental approval, but the positive news is that the approval is expected later this month. Moving on to the high-risk projects, the Dumbarton Rail, of course, is right now underfunded by approximately $400 million with no potential funding source identified. But the interim bus service started in July of this year. And finally, we have some park-and-ride and intermodal facilities that are sub-elements to some of the RM2 projects that are facing capital or operating funding challenges at this time. And MTC has been working with the sponsors and encouraging them to consolidate the project funds onto a few projects or to phase or downscope these projects in order to deliver a few usable project segments. And finally, before closing, I'd like to give you a glimpse of what's coming up in the next reporting period. As you've seen, there's been a lot of construction ongoing on some of the RM2 projects, and there's a lot more to come. This is a list of all the major contracts anticipated to be awarded in the upcoming reporting period. So for the EBART project, we have the 3A segment contract that was already actually awarded, and the 3B contract is expected to be awarded on the 16th of this month. We have the vehicles contract upcoming in the summer of 2013. For the Transbay Terminal, we have the below-grade structures contract that might be awarded at their board meeting tomorrow. And then we have the above-grade structures as well as the glazing contract contracts coming up. We also have an auxiliary lane for the eastbound HOV and the westbound HOV lane contracts coming up. And finally, construction contracts for the Benicia Intermodal Station, the Phase 2 of the Benicia Intermodal Station, as well as the Pachico Transit Center, which is part of the Express Bus North group of projects that might be awarded in the upcoming reporting period. And with that, I'd like to conclude my presentation on the Regional Measure 2 Capital Program update, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much for your excellent presentation, and this is an informational item. So, colleagues, yes, Mr. Mayor?
On the Dumbarton Rail, I mean, just being consistent with the statement you made earlier about AC Transit in referring to B1, I think that consistency should at least be referred to under Dumbarton Rail also, where basically this shortfall that you're referring to would be halved with that passes. So I'm realizing that there are people in here who want to kill it, but again, to be fair about it, that needs to be referenced that if B1 passes in Alameda County, that shortfall will be halved. So I think this gives an overly pessimistic portrayal of that project, to be completely candid with you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Green. Commissioner Haggerty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve, I think you've done a lot of good things for this organization, but I think one of the best things you've done in my district was to go at risk and actually get under construction on the BART tunnel in 2009. Is there any estimation, because of taking advantage of the construction, how much money we saved doing that? Are we prepared to say a number?
Boy, that's a good question. I think to give you a definitive answer, I'd probably like a little time. I do recall that when that box was awarded, it was about 40% below estimate, which was a considerable savings just because it sort of hit the
right
the low spot on the economy. Then you got to factor in escalation and all the rest of it. So why don't we do a little work on that and get you a detailed answer?
I think that anything that we did during that time, because I know it wasn't just that, we may want to look at that and maybe try to highlight that so people know that, you know, we took advantage of that construction series.
Right.
Thank you. Colleagues, any other questions? Commissioner McKenzie.
Just a statement on the SMART project. If any commissioners actually wish to see with their own eyes evidence of the construction of the track, and you're headed north through Runner Park to Santa Rosa, just take the Wilfred Avenue off-ramp, the newly constructed off-ramp on the 101, and on Golf Course Drive, you will see all of these new tracks and properly leveled, and the 1,600 feet pieces of rail welded together. And so we are well underway all the way through Rohnert Park and now moving south towards Petaluma. So just wanted, for the record, if you actually want to see the project being constructed, there it is.
Thank you, Commissioner McKenzie, for that useful piece of information. Colleagues, any other questions? I don't see any speaker cards from any member of the public. Again, we want to thank staff for the presentation. Now we'll go to item number 4A, state, which is allocate for fiscal year 2012 Transportation Development Act funds and state transit assistance funds to SamTrans, BART, and CCCTA.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Cheryl Chi. Resolutions 4061 revised and 4062 revised are presented for your approval. These two resolutions allocate $43 million to SamTrans and $17 million to BART in support of transit operations. It also corrects allocations to 3CTA. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. If not, I ask that you refer resolutions 4061 revised and 4062 revised to the commission for approval.
Commissioner McKenzie, do you have a comment?
Oh, sorry.
Colleagues, any comments or questions to staff? I don't see any speaker cards, but is there any member of the public who would like to speak on this item? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Colleagues, can we have a motion on this item to move forward with the recommendation?
So moved.
So we have a motion by Commissioner Cortese, second by Commissioner Bates. We can take that without objection. We can now go to item 5A, Transit Capital Priorities Policy for fiscal year 2012-13 and fiscal year 2013-14, FTA formula funds in cycle 2SDP, CMAQ, Transit Capital Rehabilitation Funds, and Transit Performance Initiative Funding Proposal.
Thank you, and good morning. I'm Glenn Tepke with the Programming and Allocations Section. This item proposes a new Transit Capital Priorities Policy for fiscal years 13 and 14, and that includes proposals to fund the Transit Performance Initiative. I will review the updates to the TCP policy and then turn it over to my colleague Kenneth Folan to review the proposals on the Transit Performance Initiative. The TCP policy is the Commission's policy for programming FTA formula funds that are managed by MTC. We project that those funds will total approximately $390 million per year over the next two fiscal years. We also use this policy to program $150 million of second cycle STP and CMAQ funds that the Commission has previously set aside for transit capital rehabilitation projects, in essence to supplement the TCP program. We use this funding to fund transit operators projects for replacing and rehabilitating their capital assets, also for preventive maintenance and in some cases for operating costs. The top priorities for these funds come from the Commission's direction in Transportation 2035 and the draft Plan Bay Area regional transportation plans. The first priority is the replacement of revenue vehicles such as buses and BARTs and Caltrain's rail cars. The second priority is fixed guideway infrastructure that includes things like tracks, bridges, tunnels, train control systems, traction power, various types of ferry equipment. We program these funds to 21 eligible transit operators. The programming is based on their high priority needs. And we do that within the urbanized area constraints that are associated with the FTA formula funds. Most of the updates to the policy that we're proposing stem from the MAP 21 federal reauthorization that was enacted earlier this year. That legislation made numerous changes to FTA's funding programs that affect the TCP program. That includes a new State of Good Repair program, which replaces the old Fixed Guideway Modernization program with higher funding levels. It also includes a new Bus and Bus Facilities Formula program that will be managed by MTC. That replaces a Bus and Bus Facilities Discretionary program, which had been managed by FTA. It creates new asset management requirements for all FTA grantees. That includes things like establishing performance measures for the condition of assets and measuring performance against those targets. The legislation also eliminated several other discretionary programs that were managed by FTA, including the Clean Fuels Program, and largely put those dollars into the formula programs. And then lastly, the legislation also eliminated the Job Access and Reverse Commute Program as a separate funding program, but basically combined the dollars and the purposes of that program into the Urbanized Area Formula Program, which is the largest and most general purpose of FTA's funding programs. If you look at the total for FTA funding programs nationwide, it's only a modest increase over the funding levels in the last few fiscal years. But if we look at the funds that will be coming into the region for the TCP program, it's actually a substantial increase because that new State of Good Repair program is one that we do relatively well in. We also have the new bus program. So between those, we're expecting about a $46 million increase in funding. That's about 13% over last year. The aside from the changes resulting from MAP 21, most of the policy is proposing to continue the elements of the previous policies. That includes things like urbanized area eligibility, how we score the projects relative to the Commission's priorities. We're also proposing to continue the vehicle procurement reserve, where we set aside funds for future needs of major vehicle projects, such as the BART and Caltrain vehicle replacement projects. We are proposing several new and updated elements to the policy. Some of those, again, respond to MAP 21, that the new State of Good Repair program and the higher funding levels that come with that allows us to create some additional funding capacity to implement the Transit Sustainability Program. We'll be coming back to that. To address the elimination of the JARC program, which we have traditionally used to help fund the Lifeline program, we are proposing to set aside a portion of the urbanized area funds, about $3 million this year, about $2.4 million next year, so that we can continue to fund the Lifeline programs at levels comparable to what we've been doing in the last few years. We're also proposing some new elements to increase the flexibility for the transit operators to use these funds. For example, operators could request to replace their buses earlier in their life cycles so that by the time the buses are actually replaced, they're not quite so worn out. Also, the ability to use the funds that we set aside for the fixed guideway needs for other high-priority needs, and those are within limits. Actually, both of those proposals we made in response to requests from San Francisco MTA, but they would be options for all of the operators. And then lastly, we make some updates to the urbanized area eligibility to reflect the consolidation of the Vallejo and Benicia transit services under SoulTrans and the transfer of the Vallejo ferry service to WEDA. And then turning to the TSP implementation, as I mentioned, we do have a higher funding capacity through the FTA formula programs. That reduces the need to use all of that $150 million of STP and CMAQ funds that were set aside to supplement TCP. So we're proposing to redirect a portion of those STP and CMAQ funds to implement the TSP recommendations. And those recommendations are to implement a transit performance initiative that has two main elements, a performance incentive program and a capital investment program. We're proposing to fund those at $15 million annually for the incentive element and $13 million annually for the investment element. That would be for 4 years for each of those two elements. And we're kind of sizing that recommendation in order to provide sufficient funding for a robust transit performance initiative program while leaving sufficient funds in the TCP program so that we can continue to cover the highest priority capital replacement and rehab needs. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Kenneth to talk about the transit performance initiative.
Thanks, Glenn. Kenneth Follin with MTC staff. As Glenn mentioned, the TPI, Transit Performance Investment or Initiative, has two elements, the investment and the incentive program, and they were both, the frameworks were adopted by the Commission as part of the Transit Sustainability Project in Resolution 4060. So I'll first quickly go over the investment program because you have already made one initial round of funding in that as part of the TSP adoption. Essentially, it's a focus on improvements in high ridership corridors, and we've already programmed $28 million to five projects. So the staff recommendation for today is to add an additional $13 million over 4 years to this program to continue trying to make these improvements in high ridership corridors. On to the incentive program. In the adopting resolution for the TSP, there was less information on this. What it said was staff would come back with dollar amounts and a formula, and that's what we're trying to do here today. It's essentially a way to award ridership increases on a year-over-year basis as well as productivity improvements for transit properties. What we're recommending is $15 million a year for 4 years, and there's a couple pieces of commission direction I wanted to just make you aware of. The first one is that when we adopted the TSP, what was included in there at the direction of the commission was to add a clause that said that small transit agencies would be held harmless from the or an option would be developed that they could be held harmless from the funding amounts that we're proposing. So when I go through the scenarios, I'll talk a little bit more, but we have developed an option that holds them harmless. The second element under that commission direction was brought up last month as part of the deliberations related to the youth passes, and that is that this direction was provide options that allow each transit operator to consider implementing a pilot pass program, and I believe that was brought up by Commissioner Kinsey last month. That is not in a resolution like the first one is, but that was something that we have included in the staff recommendation today. And again, I'll go over the scenarios. Before we jump straight into the competitive incentive program, we are recommending a transition year, and the transition year would be the first year of funding, obviously, and it would outlay the funds based purely on ridership, on fiscal year 2010-2011 ridership, because that's the most recent audited ridership that is available. So, again, the past pilot programs would be eligible for this. We would go to essentially a call for projects and get projects back from sponsors that are really focused on improving productivity and increasing ridership. After the first year funding, the proposal would go straight into sort of the incentive-based program. And as you can see up there, there are two scenarios. The first scenario would be a total competitive process, including the small operators. Scenario B would not include the small operators. That's the hold harmless scenario. What the factors are of the proposal is 25% based on ridership, 25% based on passengers per hour. That's the productivity piece. And finally, to kind of normalize against the size of operators, 50% of the formula would be based on annual ridership. And to sort of illustrate how this would affect various agencies, we've listed both scenarios A and B on this chart. What I'd like to call your attention to on this chart is the last line, the small operators. As you can see in scenario A, that is where they are competing. They, based on a three-year average of 8, 9, 9, 10, and 10, 11, they would do better competing than they would being held harmless. So this is something to consider. We're not asking you to approve the formula today. We're going to go get some input on that from the agencies and from the Policy Advisory Council and others, and then come back to you. But as you can see the dilemma there for sort of how agencies would weigh in among the small operators is there certainly is the chance that there is going to be opportunity for rewards, financial rewards, but you have to balance that with the risk. And this, again, is just a detail of the small operators. As you can see, there's some that have quite a bit of difference, ACE, I think, and down towards the bottom, maybe Vacaville are two agencies that when we looked at these 3 years, they would certainly do better in the competitive formula. One thing to mention, though, our illustrative is based on 3 years. Obviously, the spikes from a year to year would be the peaks and valleys would be more pronounced. Okay. Oh, wait. So again, to sort of recap the recommendations, what we're asking, the recommendation today is to establish a TSP policy to set the TPI annual funding levels at $15 million for incentive and $13 million for the investment. And then finally, to also approve this transition year that's based wholly on ridership for the incentive program. We're also asking that you release these scenarios that we just discussed, and we would come back in a couple of months after speaking with the Policy Advisory Council and with all of the operators to kind of give you a recommendation on that. So those are some next steps listed on how we would issue calls for projects and come back to you with a proposed TPI incentive program. And the time frames are listed on this chart here. So with that, I'd give it back to you, Commissioner Campos, if there are any questions.
Thank you very much to staff for their work on this and their presentation. Colleagues, do we have any questions? I know we have some speaker cards, but before we turn to public comment, so why don't we turn to public comment? Vice Chair Worth.
I know that the second piece of the presentation, you said you've put out these formulas. In looking at the graphs, there's a lot of odd the way the numbers play out. And so I'm wondering, too, if there could be a little more background as you go through this in the next few months to us that gives really some background, not only in terms of the methodology, but also in a way we're talking about a zero-sum gain, as I understand it. We've got a finite pot of money, and we're moving it around. And so you have one gain at another expenses loss, and so you're, they're kind of in it being in the same column. It's confusing. So I'm just wondering if we might be able to get some more information on of these column changes. What represents increases over an old base versus, you know, decreases, so that we can compare and really understand the impact? Because what's confusing to me is that the impact over small operators is different. You know, some operators have the results are different in different columns than I thought we had originally expected. So I'm a little bit confused.
Commissioner, we'd be happy to do that. And I would like to make two points, though, before you leave the room today. The first is what we're showing you here, and I don't know, Glenn, if we can go back to the – you want to go back to the small operator? No, you can't even read that. Let's try the big guys just to make it simpler. One more back. There you go. One thing I want to emphasize here is that this is just an illustration, and it's looking backward. Now, the backward period happens to be the teeth of the Great Recession, so that's a lot of noise in the system. What we're going to be asking you to do at the end of the year is to implement this program going forward, and that's going to be as the economy is recovering. Now, different operators are faring in different ways. You know, BART right now is setting records almost every day for ridership, and a lot of that has to do with gas prices, not necessarily anything particular that BART's doing. I think you should expect to see a little bit of noise and some discrepancies among systems. They won't all necessarily benefit the same way. BART tends to pick up a lot of choice riders when congestion's high, when gas prices are high, when economic activity is high. That's not necessarily true of some other systems. Muni, for example, is pretty saturated in terms of the city and county of San Francisco. Their major challenge, I think, is a productivity challenge of trying to provide more service with the money they have, not necessarily attracting, you know, scads more riders. And that's the second point I wanted to make. And if you can go back, Glenn, to the one that is the one right before it. The reason we've given you two scenarios, and these aren't the only two, but the reason we've given you two that have two things factored in, both an absolute increase in ridership as well as an increase in passengers per hour, is that when you set up an incentive program, I think you need to be very careful to avoid perverse results. And we don't, if we had something just based on ridership, then operators might be tempted just to run lots of extra service. And if you got two guys on the bus, that's two more riders. Great. If you did it just based on productivity, passengers per hour, they might want to cut service to jam the buses up. So the reason we've got both factors in play is to try to mitigate against those results. But one of the risks of taking this incentive approach is, you know, people are very creative, and they can think of some tricks that you can't think of ahead of time. So I don't want to leave you with the impression that these are the only two ways to do it, and I expect we'll be getting some comment from folks to take other factors into account as well, because we do want to reward good behavior here. We don't want to encourage people just to do accounting tricks to get more money. So those are the two points I wanted to make, Commissioner, but I would expect, whether we do it for this three-year period or the three-year period after it, you're going to see some differences among systems that might not be immediately intuitive, just because they all operate in different environments.
Thank you. Thank you for that. With the pleasure of the chair, I'd just like to follow up. So I guess, and I appreciate that clarification, what I'd love to understand down the road is there are some differences within what historically have been like operators. And I just would love to understand that, too, a little bit more.
You know, you've got to remember you got different labor contracts out there start and end at different times. Fuel is a good example. Fuel costs right now are very high. That is killing the ferry operators because those boats are gas guzzlers. It's great for BART because they don't buy fuel. They buy electricity. So, again, there are so many factors at play here that I do think this is a good idea. You know, just handing out the money like an ATM is not getting us the results we want. But I do think we need to be quite careful when we put money riding on data like this that we get the right performance indicators into play.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you to our executive director and their staff, his staff. I doubt that any of our agencies would engage in accounting tricks to get more money. So why don't we go to public comment? Bob Allen, so if you can please come up. Teresa Molina. Gloria Esteva. Daryl Boyd. Antonio Armado Vaz. And Angelina Yu. And also Joe Rye.
Good morning, Commissioners. Bob Allen from Urban Habitat. As someone who participated on the Trent Sustainability Plan advisory group, which was a very interesting, I think, an important process, there was a lot of focus on the cost cutting and kind of getting our operation costs in line. So we're really pleased today to see the focus on ridership, both within the investment program. We think the TPI has been a really great program to show we can improve with kind of low-level investment, urban trunk line service, and now with the incentive program on the focus on increasing ridership. I think as Mr. Hemminger mentioned, you know, with the different systems have different needs. They have different kind of drivers that are pushing their costs, their efficiency, and all those different factors. And we think that, you know, ultimately that the local operators and the local agencies know best about how to increase the ridership and how to do that in a way that's consistent with the comments that Mr. Hemminger made around not doing it with sleight of hand and tricks. But as we move to try to increase ridership, we want to make sure that we're not skewing it towards just picking off choice riders. That's one of the things I think Mr. Hemminger also mentioned. So, you know, we're very supportive of the operators having kind of local control over how they form this proposal. That means the pilot programs that we've been talking about here for low-income people and youth, we think it should be something that should be determined by the operators so that we're not, again, skewing them towards promoting programs that or initiatives that would try to increase ridership that's, you know, disproportionately focused on choice riders and that there's equitable outcomes in terms of how we try to increase this ridership. So both on the capital side and the investment side, around the focus on investment with the urban trunk line corridors and on the incentive side, we think these are some of the pieces coming out of the Transit Sustainability Plan that we're excited about, and we look forward to the Commission's discussion on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hola, buenos días. Mi nombre es Teresa Molina. Yo soy miembro de POWER. Y primero que nada, les quiero dar las gracias, ¿verdad?, por darnos la oportunidad de estar aquí presente en su reunión.
Good morning. My name is Teresa Molina from POWER, and first of all, I'd like to thank you for allowing us the opportunity to be here in the meeting.
Y pues estamos aquí, ¿verdad?, nuevamente, porque sabemos que hay fondos para todos los condados, y nos da gusto de que haya esos fondos para todos los condados y que se beneficien de ellos.
We're here again. Because we've been informed that there's an opportunity to provide funding to various counties to support transit passes.
Pero especialmente yo estoy aquí representando a POWER, a los latinos, a afroamericanos, asiáticos, comunidades de bajos recursos.
But I represent the organization POWER, communities of color like African American, Latinos, and Asian communities in San Francisco.
Y la razón es porque queremos que este año empiece nuestro prioridad, que es el Fastpass gratis para nuestros niños y nuestros jóvenes, porque estamos sufriendo una crisis económica por el alto costo de vivir.
And we ask that these funds be approved because we've been fighting for free muni for youth, and we need this program to be approved as soon as possible. We're in an economic crisis, and it's been difficult for us to make ends meet because of the high cost of living.
Y si este programa no se pone este año, nuestros niños van a seguir sufriendo cómo llegar a sus escuelas, a su programa de after school, a sus trabajos.
And if this if these funds aren't approved, our youth will continue to suffer in figuring out how to get to school and after school programs.
Thank you. Muchas gracias.
Por eso les pedimos de favor que tomen en cuenta Thank nuestro you. Pedido Thank y you. Que utilicen Thank ese you. Dinero para este
Muchas
año.
Gracias.
Gracias por su paciencia.
So we thank you and we ask you to approve these funds.
Next speaker, please.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Donnell Boyd, and I'm a member of Power, and I support the Transit Performance Initiative funding proposal. Number one is because we are happy that the proposal would allow each county the option to use the TPI funds for youth and low-income past pilot programs. Number two, I would ask you to immediately release the funds because African-American community, Latinos, Asian communities have been hard in this economic crisis. Number three, we want to increase the ridership in San Francisco because we want to get less cars off the streets. And number four, we are happy that the new proposal would allow all counties to benefit. So I would like to say, please approve the Transit Performance Initiative funding proposal immediately. And thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Sí, buenas tardes. Confío en que muchos de ustedes consideren importante las necesidades de nuestra comunidad. Y por eso estoy aquí para decirles.
Good morning. I'm here to let you know that I trust that you will take the needs of our communities into account.
Que mi familia es usuario diario del transporte público. Y con esta crisis no nos alcanza para pagar la tarifa del bus para los niños.
My family uses public transit daily, and with this economic crisis, we don't have enough funds to pay for the buses for the youth.
No estamos pidiendo demasiado, y existe una propuesta de fondos de la iniciativa de función de tránsito.
We recognize that there are funds that can be used by different counties to support low-income passes and free passes for youth by county, and we don't feel like we're asking for too much.
Y estos fondos darían oportunidad a que otros condados ofrezcan pases gratis a personas de bajos ingresos y a jóvenes y niños.
And again, it'll allow this opportunity in different counties for low-income people and youth.
Y esto lo estamos pidiendo que sea por favor en este año, ya que como ustedes han mencionado, la crisis nos ha impactado fuertemente a las familias de bajos ingresos.
And we ask that these funds be approved this year, because you recognize that there is an economic crisis that's severely impacting our families.
Y yo quiero que consideren también que las familias trabajadoras con nuestro hábito del uso del transporte público siempre hemos contribuido al medio ambiente.
And that working families by using public transit are supporting and taking into account the needs of the climate.
Thank you.
Gracias de antemano por el apoyo que le den a esta petición.
Thank you in advance for your support.
Next speaker, please.
Good morning, commissioners and members of the public. My name is Antonio Amaro Vaz from San Francisco. I'm also a member of POWER. With Transit Performance Initiative funding proposal, or the argument about sustainability and equity is off the table, right? It looks like it. MTC resolution 4060 and 4072 is like angels in the sky for the youth. SFMTA may get $6.7 million of the $15 million for 4 years. We really appreciate that. It would allow each county the option to use TPI funding. So that's the argument about equity. The funding would allow San Francisco to begin pilot project of free muni pass for low-income youth. The kids needs, they need to go to school, they need to go to work, after school program, doctor's appointment, and many kids going through some tough times right now, either the parents in jail or prison, or maybe laid off from work, so they're going to need those funding for ridership. I think that the fare inspectors in San Francisco cause a strong impact on the youth because of not having a ticket for riding the muni. As far as ride performance can be measured in San Francisco. If you ride on F line or 30, which goes to Chinatown, 45 goes to Chinatown, 38.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next speaker, please.
Good morning, Chair Campos and commissioners. My name is Joe Rye. I'm the Transit Division Manager for City of Petaluma. I manage Petaluma Transit. I wanted to first thank your staff, Steve, Glenn, Kenneth, for the work they put into the project. We're really excited to see incentivized funding in the region. And with one small exception, I'm really very much concerned about Scenario B and its impacts on some of the small operators that have implemented productivity and ridership gains in the last 3 years. Going back to the table that that Commissioner Wirth was mentioning earlier, it showed some winners and losers. And I think as staff has time, if they go through this, you're going to see some of the winners and losers are based on those who have realized recent ridership increases, such as Petaluma Transit. Our ridership is up 85% in the last 3 years, and our productivity is more than doubled. That hasn't been easy. It's been through restructuring of routes, some service cuts initially, but now I'm happy to say we've restored a lot of those hours. But it seems like Scenario B takes that incentive away, and you can just look at the Petaluma number and also our friends at Sonoma County Transit, Vacaville. There's a number of operators that would be harmed by that. So I'd urge your staff to develop a modified Scenario B or a Scenario C that would perhaps be as simple as allowing the small operators to choose between A and B. That way they can have the prior level funding should that be the better opportunity for them, but then they have the opportunity to tap into the incentive funds that we're so, as a region, striving to get, and so we don't punish those that are actually succeeding. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Ernest Stokes.
You can speak into the mic, please. Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Ernest Stokes. I'm a member of POWER, an organization that's part of the Free Muni for Youth Coalition. I'm going to try and make this quick. In light of the fact that as population density increases in the Bay Area, the role played by public transit will become vital if gridlock is to be avoided and livability is to be enhanced. And aside from this, the oil companies seem determined to get us all out of our private cars and onto public transportation. And back to my point. My point is that the United States does not have a public transportation infrastructure that equals other developed nations. Even China, for example, has a high-speed rail line. The United States does not. The Bay Area led the way in technology, and there is no reason that the Bay Area cannot show similar leadership in transportation. This proposal is a move in the right direction, and I would also like to thank Commissioner Casey for his proposal of a pilot program for low-income youth, for putting that in the legislation, and please pass the transit infrastructure proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker, please.
Morning, commissioners. My name is Angelina Yu. I'm a youth organizer with the Chinatown Community Development Center, a nonprofit based in San Francisco's Chinatown, and we organize low-income residents around the issues of affordable housing, neighborhood planning, and transit justice. I've had the pleasure of working with young people over the course of the past year around the issue of increased access to transit. In reviewing the transit performance initiative before this committee, we find that to be very creative because it knocks out two policy goals with one program. The first policy goal, as stated by the MTC, is purely to increase ridership. The TPI program provides the discretionary funding needed to do so. We've heard from folks that no two transit operators and no two systems are alike. The fact that this program, the staff recommendation in allowing each transit operator to decide how they best can adapt a strategy to meet the goal of increasing their ridership is particularly noteworthy. Programs such as allowing them to adopt a low-income or youth pass pilot will help to achieve such goals. That in turn itself exposes more young people to transit, which meets the goal of increasing ridership. But something we also think it'll do is that it lays the foundation, the pipeline for building future ridership. We hope that the TPI funding would provide the opportunity and really the time needed to gather the data to show the metrics that this program, whether or not it actually does increase ridership. So we hope that you can approve the funding. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any other member of the public who would like to speak on this item? Seeing none, public comment is closed. So, colleagues, we heard the presentation from staff as well as public comment, and we have essentially three recommendations that have been made by staff. Commissioner Haggerty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very concerned, as some of the other speakers, about this scenario B, and I think that I heard in the staff presentation that you're kind of looking at a hybrid between the two. Did I hear that correctly?
Commissioner, scenario B is here at the request of the commission to hold the small operators.
We don't always make the right decisions.
I think the choice here is whether they want to compete or whether they want to have no risk up or down. And if they want to compete, that's fine with me. I would prefer a situation where all the operators are competing. I think you have to choose one or the other, though. You can't have your cake and eat it, too.
I thought I did hear the staff presentation saying that they were looking at something maybe that sits within
Look, there may be a third or a fourth or a fifth scenario, sure, but I think basically the choice for the small systems will be, do we want to compete under some framework or do we want to be held harmless? I think the fear they had was that competition would hurt them. I think at least over these 3 years, the competition would help many of them.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying, and actually that was a little bit of a clarification for me. But again, okay, so you're saying there could be a couple additional scenarios coming.
I think it's likely, Commissioner, and I don't want to speak for the large systems, but I think what you'll probably hear for the large systems is they like scenario B precisely for that reason, that it leaves more money on the table for them.
But I think that some of these large systems are actually dependent on the smaller ones. And, for example, I can tell you that Labda's ridership is going through the roof right now because people are riding BART and people need to get to BART and they're utilizing Labda to get there. So my concern is that we could use BART as a backbone system but yet have no feeder to them, which will, you know, be a disincentive for people to get out of their cars and get onto the rail. Other than I know gas is kind of doing that for us now, but I mean even the reports this morning is gas is going to start heading down. So and people get back in their cars so they can listen to their makeup and do it, or listen to the radio and do what they want to do. So I mean, personally, I hear what you're saying, Steve, but I hope that as we move forward that we are a little flexible and looking at maybe a couple other options, because the direction I got from my small operator is, yeah, stick your toe in the water, but we're not ready to swim yet.
Well, and I think it's also important, Commissioner, to note that the amount of money we're talking about here, $15 million a year, is, I think, about 5% of this whole program. So it very much is a toe in the water. We're not jumping into the deep end. I will say, though, in the interest of full disclosure, I think our interest at the staff level is to start with this and move more in this direction. I think the more of our money that is riding on performance, the better, as long as we're not letting the system go to pot. I mean, at some point, you're going to punish the riders by taking their bus replacement away. But I think the more that the operators are focused on productivity and ridership, and less on just jostling over here, I think the better off we're all going
to
be.
And I think you're right. I mean, it really does no good to give a bunch of money to somebody who's got three people riding around on a bus all day. But, you know, maybe, and I know you're going to say, well, we do this all the time, Commissioner, but maybe it might be nice to have some sort of pot of money that also looks at these small operators for service expansion, where they have a certain amount of time to prove that they can get this their ridership to an acceptable level in a corridor, and if not, we'll cut them off. But also give the smaller operators an incentive to also try to bring about productive transit in corridors. Just a thought.
Generally, again, though, for the small systems, their challenge is not productivity. It's attracting more riders. Generally, for the large systems, it's the reverse. So that's the difficulty we're going to have straddling here. Correct. Yeah.
Commissioner McKenzie.
Excuse me, Jake McKenzie, representing Sonoma County Cities and the county. I was pleased that one of our small operators was represented here this morning from Petaluma, and I would gather that discussions have been taking place, and I would just like to say that as we move forward with this, those concerns that were raised, and I think they're also reflective of what Commissioner Haggerty was saying, that they be considered strongly. I am not a voting member of this committee, so I conclude my remarks.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Steve, for purposes of clarification, voting on the recommendations doesn't preclude resolution of these issues going forward.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. Just again, to refresh your context here, on the agenda, we're asking you to approve three things today and send them to the Commission for approval this month. And one of them is the baseline year of funding that would be used or could be used by any operator to pursue the pilot pass approach. The issue you've been discussing for the last few minutes on the formula, we're not proposing you approve it this month. Just get it out there for comment, and then we bring something back to you to approve in December.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Green.
One thing I'd just like to perhaps throw out there, and in your distribution percentages, and I know it could be argued that 25 and 25 equals 50, so that you've got them balanced already, although I wouldn't necessarily agree with that, because I think that if you're truly going to be trying to drive toward performance, why not make them all at one-third? You know, passenger increase were 33%, the passenger hours increase 33%, and the total passengers at 33%. So if you're really going to be driving at performance, I think we need to make the carrot even bigger. So, I mean, I would think that would be another way to look at this, would be to even out the percentages here, make everybody equal at one-third across the board, rather than still giving the heaviest preponderance individually to just total passengers at right now. Because that's not performance, that's just history.
Thank you, Commissioner Green. Colleagues, on the recommendations, is there a motion?
I'll move it.
Motion by Commissioner Bates, seconded by Commissioner Cortese. Can we take that without objection? Oh, actually, Commissioner Haggerty?
And I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I am not a voting member of this committee either yet. I think Green's idea warrants prayer, and maybe it could be brought to the full commission so we could take a look at
I would imagine that there is an opportunity for staff to take that into account as the item goes forward to the full commission.
Well, again, it won't be going to the full commission until you see it again. So we could certainly rough out Commissioner Green's idea and route it through all the folks we're going to talk to about it.
All right. So the commission can consider the items that are before us and still address this issue when it comes back in December.
So he's right. An obvious way to balance three factors is to split it in thirds. So we could take a look at how that operates as well.
Great.
Newtonian.
Again, this doesn't impact the specific action here. So we have a motion and a second. Can we take that without objection? Without objection. If we can now go to item 5B, cycle 2, One Bay Area Grant Program Update, MTC Resolution Number 4035 revised.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm sorry. What kind of time do we have here? I have I'm blowing it right now. I'm 20 minutes late, so I stayed on for the quorum. If I leave, is there no quorum?
We I think can use the vice chair if she agrees. If you have to leave, I think this item is less than 5 minutes.
All right.
Hi, this is Craig Goldblatt. I'm with the program.
We'll be brief.
I'll be very brief. This basically proposes adjustments to the One Bay Area Grant Program, which was adopted by the Commission last May. There are three adjustments. The first adjustment involves revisions to the Priority Development Area and Investment Growth Strategy. We were directed to work with CMAs, which we have over the last few months, and the minor changes that we made, we're all in agreement. Secondly, last May, staff noted that the OBAC County distribution formula, which is based on partially on RENA, we would need to look at it again in July when ABAC has those final numbers based on the final methodology. We've updated those numbers. And lastly, attachment B has been adjusted, reflecting some CMA OBAC project selections and further definition of some of the regional program projects. And this attachment will be brought back to you periodically in the future to reflect new project selections. So in conclusion, staff requests that the committee refer Resolution 4035 revised to the commission for approval.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation, Commissioner Dodd.
I had a whole bunch of points here I wanted to make. I'm not in the sake of my time. One of the concerns I have here, I support this through and through, and I appreciate staff's willingness to work with CMAs and have them self-certify. At the end of the day, it's still $320 million. And my concern is, and I don't need anything today, but I wish staff between now and the meeting could come up with some sort of appeal process or something where, if it didn't seem to me like there was any – way to come back and approach staff or approach the commission or something if there was an issue. That's one. And two is Scott Haggerty had an amendment where there would be some CMA planning money to be carved off of this, and Commissioner Spearing wanted me to bring that up prior to because he was not able to be here. And where is that?
I'll ask you to maybe provide a little more detail on the first point, Commissioner, but on the second one, I think there has been some confusion, and there was even some confusion, I think, on the night that action occurred. The $70 million that was the subject, I believe, of Commissioner Haggerty's motion, that money exists over 25 years in the plan, and it starts after the OBAG period ends. So when we put the OBAG program together, we scrubbed the cupboard bare and put all the money on the table. None of that $70 million is during the first 4 years when OBAG starts. It's 25-year money in the plan. So it's really relevant for the next cycle of OBAG, not for the first cycle.
Okay.
Commissioner Dunn?
Well, on the second one, I just think it's with that kind of money on the table, I think it's appropriate for the CMA if there were some concerns, I think the commission should be able to, you know, bring up, you know, appeal a decision of self-certification by a CMA.
Maybe I'm just the only one. Maybe Alex can help me out here. I'm just having a hard time understanding what the issue is.
Ms. Buckelman?
Thank you. What the self-certification process for the CMAs is really just sort of a checklist where they're sort of certifying that they're meeting all the requirements that are in our resolution and that
right.
the projects have met the requirements, such as complete streets, having a housing element, et cetera. So it really was a way to help them make sure that they were meeting all the requirements of OBAG. We did talk about, you know, coming back to the commission in late 2013 to really update how this process has worked at the county level. So I'm not sure if you're asking for something in advance of that, if a project comes forward that the commission doesn't agree with, even if it went through the county process. Maybe I need a little more clarification.
Right. I guess one of the scenarios that was brought up to me is if, we're all competing for this money all over, the Bay Area. We put a lot of time and effort, for example, in Napa County on our Complete Streets, program. And as it was brought up to me is that at great cost, that the self-certification process could enable, one specific CMA to move forward, a project that perhaps, there was not complete agreement yet within that CMA. And the reality is it comes back to the pot of money, 300. I just think that with this amount of money, the commission ought to be able to override if there's a need. I know that's not really a
well, maybe, Commissioner, I think the best way to proceed might just be how we would probably proceed anyway, which is on a case-by-case basis.
Exactly.
I mean, I think all of you are sort of maybe this is the wrong metaphor for this time of the week, but you're all sort of deputy sheriffs, right, as far as that goes. And if you see something in your county or are aware of something in another county that you think we're not on top of and that is at odds with our rules, I think you're all entitled to bring that for us.
Yeah. That's fine.
Whoops.
I know Commissioner Haggerty had his mic first and then Commissioner Worth.
Staff is really not liking my microphone today. Steve, let's go back to this second part that Commissioner Dodd brought up. And everything I discuss with you right now is with all due respect. But I don't remember anywhere in my motion that it said, although I would agree with you that it's 20-year money because that's what it is. But I don't say I don't remember anything in the motion that really stated, it doesn't get funded till the second round. And if in fact this is planning money, to me it seems like, as much money as we could get, I realize there's some here, but as much money as we can get to the CMAs to help get this planning done is vitally important. So I guess what I'm asking is there a way to go back to at least try to find a way to get the CMA some more money to get this planning done? Because, I mean, they're not social service agencies, and they have to keep the doors open and the lights on.
Commissioner, obviously, you're the ones who make motions, not me, and you set policy. But we can't print money. The money doesn't exist in the first 4 years. This is federal money that we get subject to appropriation by Congress. And I apologize if I didn't make this clear enough on the evening you made the motion. It was a surprise to me, so it may not have been clear when I explained to you, but I thought I did explain that the $70 million was past the OBAG period. Now, within OBAG itself, there is a program,
right.
A PDA grant
40,
program.
40 million.
That is going to be the subject of some further discussion about how we cut that money up. Some of it we believe needs to go to ABAG to support their activities.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it may need to go to the CMAs. Some of it may go to specific projects. I don't think we've decided that, but I'm afraid the $70 million, it's just not in the right sequence of time.
Look, I hear everything you're saying. And all I'm going to do at this point is turn the CMA directors loose on you, and we'll see where it shakes out.
Yeah, you know,
I mean that with respect, but I'm hearing enough of them.
I've heard from them as well. And look, at some point, the dog just doesn't hunt, and that $70 million is not available now, and we can't give it to them if it's not here.
Okay, all right, you'll hear from them.
Commissioner Worth.
Great, thank you, Mr. Campos. I just had a question. Maybe I'm confused. We're going through this One Bay Area grant process right now at the county levels. And I guess one of the things that I really appreciate staff working closely with the CMAs. I know there's a lot of questions about it. It's new, and it's going all the way down to the cities. And appreciate you working with the planning directors and everybody that's working so hard to try to implement this. One thing I just would request is that when we become aware of what the total funding numbers will be, that we're able to communicate that to the counties, because what happens typically, for example, in Contra Costa County, often allocations get split over 2 years. And so what we got caught up in is that allocations were allocated under one set of rules, and then because the county had chosen to split the dollars, the next set was different. And what I'm concerned about is that we want to make sure that the counties understand what the dollars will be, so that when they're making those kinds of internal decisions, we don't end up with a big pot 1 year and then, you know, the small pot next year. So is there a mechanism? I know we're relying on the federal government, but is there a way to kind of, so people know kind of what the framework will be?
Yes, Commissioner Worth. We did update the funding numbers, as Craig noted, to reflect the final RENA. So we have, we have provided this to CMA directors. We can do a formal transmittal. As an example, it's in Appendix A1. You know, Contra Costa's final number is $45 million. We've given them a little more detail on how much of that is, you know, one color of money versus another, because obviously the CMA directors need that. But we expect that to be, you know, the final number. We know that, you know, we're obviously subject to the federal government, but we believe, based on where we are, that we can make good on those numbers for the counties. So those are the final numbers for them to program against.
Great. Commissioner Green?
Two things. One is that, you know, our county is going through Scott and I had a meeting on it earlier this week, is how much money out of our PDA money are you going to split it between active PDAs, inactives, and planning? So there is going to be some discretion at each county level CMA as to how much money they want to add into planning. It's going to be up to you to some degree. And then secondly, I know Dodd left, but you know, his proposal there as to if you're a disgruntled commissioner coming out of your own county, didn't like the way your CMA moved the money around, are you then going to be, if you're on the minority vote on that, you're going to come here and cry about it and try to get an overturn here or try to get some kind of intervention on that? I'd say that's sort of a dicey role there, but it would even be more of a provocative action would be to, I don't think what Campos did in San Francisco was right, or what Cortese did was right in Santa Clara County, what Worth did was right in Contra Costa County, or McKenzie did in Sonoma County, and then come here and bitch about it. I'm just throwing that out as a, you know, how much fun that's going to get you into also. So I would be really careful about that one.
Thank you, Commissioner Green. Colleagues, any other comments? I didn't see any speaker cards, but is there any member of the public who would like to speak on item 5B? Seeing none, public comment is closed. So, colleagues, this is an action item. We have a request to make certain administrative changes. Is there a motion?
Approval.
Motion by Commissioner Cortese, seconded by Commissioner Bates. Can we take that without objection? Without objection. And thank you again to staff for the work. If we can now go to item 6, which is an informational item, California Transportation Commission update. If we can make it brief.
In the interest of time, there's a report in your packet, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Colleagues, any comments or questions? I didn't see any speaker cards. Any member of the public who would like to speak? Seeing none, public comment is closed. We can now go to last item, public comment. I didn't see any speaker cards. Any member of the public would like to speak on any item not on the agenda but within the jurisdiction of the committee? Seeing none, public comment is closed, and that concludes the business of the committee. Meeting adjourned.